It's the basement. Hello to all, and thank you for tuning in to the second episode of It's Debatable, a platform of discussion for the students of international relations at the University of Malta. I am Hilary Briffa, and I will be your host for the next half hour. Today's topic open for debate is secularism, and present in the studios to discuss this are two students, Darren Ketkuti and Gorkem Dirik. Also present as a phone-in guest is Dr. Angelo Ketkuti, the press and political officer at the European Commission representation in Malta. We also have the input of an academic advisor, Dr. Arsalan Al-Shinawi, who lectures on religion and secularization in international relations.
Thank you, Hilary, for that comment. I have now Dr. Arsalan Al-Shinawi, lecturer in international political economy from the University of Malta and the Department of International Relations. Thank you, Dr. Al-Shinawi, for accepting our invitation to feature in It's Debatable. Today we are discussing secularism. How do you define the concept to our listeners?
Thank you very much for this opportunity. It's my pleasure to be of some help in this aspect. Secularism, adopted by the British writer George Jacob Holyoak in the early 1850s, to describe basically a social system where morals and actions are shaped and directed by considerations found in the physical world, not by religious ideas and beliefs in a form of spiritual sense. Holyoak used the term to refer to his views of advocating a social order separate from religion, while at that time he was not really actively rejecting the importance of faith and religious principles. Today, in those days, as such, it started from attempts in education circles to separate forms of education from religious teachings and pronouncements. But now, later stages, it had moved into other fields.
So, Dr. Al-Shinawi, what do you believe has pushed for secularism to emerge as a major global force today?
Well, although I say, let me just a few words on the history to tell our listeners that it's nothing really new. As such, though I said it was in the mid-19th century that the term was coined, but we know the roots of this form of free thought or free thinking goes back as early as the Romans and the Greek and the Romans. One can also, very important, mentions the medieval Muslim scholar Ibn Rushd, as well as the Enlightenment thinkers in Western Europe, notably Voltaire and John Locke. In modern times, one can mention Bernard Russell and Robert Ingersoll, and many others across different countries. Now, to my mind, if I tell you what really made secularism more important, I think scientific discoveries and the weakening of ideas that human beings inherited from centuries ago, I think a form of a scientific understanding of the physical world, a form of scientism or physical understanding, has pushed people into more modern forms of education and teaching, away from traditional teaching and pronouncements that generally religions bring about.
So I believe that in terms of political understanding, the concept of secularism becomes even more specific. Can you elaborate on this point, please?
That is very correct, Darren. Secularism, mostly, in fact, for many people in journalism and in debates, most people understand it as in political terms. In political terms, basically, in simple terms, I would say separation between the state and the dominant religious entity. Many people say church, but that only if we are speaking in Europe. But let's speak in a global term, in an international level. If it's in a Muslim country, separation of the state or government from the mosque, from the main faith or the main religious understanding of that society. So political understanding, political approach, and wooden rules and regulations in that society should be based on scientific understanding of the physical world, rather than on views and ideas of religion.
So I believe there are also differences according to geography. I believe that geography was an influential factor in bringing about secularism.
Yes, yes. In fact, to be fair with Western thought, much of secularism and secularization today belongs to the Western thought, because mostly in Western societies we have the idea of secularization and secularism. Basically, the famous statement of separation between the church and the state. In Muslim countries, the debate is still much smaller, much less spread, in very limited circles of academia, but at the popular, at the university level, is much less, and this has to do with the difference between Islam and Christianity itself, and the history of both religions. In Europe, secularism is generally a socio-political movement away from traditional religious values toward modernization. In fact, if you ask me, in Europe, I say the word modernization and secularization more or less are intertwined. It's very difficult to separate them. So every modernization in Europe is more or less thought in terms of non-religious approach, or rather secular. In USA, no. On a social level, secularism is less prevalent, I mean less obvious than in comparison to Western Europe. And state secularism there has helped mostly to protect religion from government interference. In fact, very quickly I say, I was very shocked, very recently, coincidence, the new governor of Alabama, 3-4 days ago, in his first day, he came and he said in public, he said, all those who are not Christians are not my brothers and sisters. This is in 2011 in the USA. So for the gentleman who's the governor of a major state, still believes in what we call in a non-secular way, if the subject is secularism, still allows the whole idea of religion and Christianity to come in consideration. So the issue is here, someone might ask, well, what is the concern? And I say, how fair or how justice in that state will be available for a non-Christian if he is a citizen or a person living, residing in Alabama. In Malta, one should say, which is very important for our debate, I thought to share with you people here listening, the idea of secularism. Certainly, in more recent decades, following national independence and along with higher levels of education, more people having higher education, more education, availability of media, which means there's a larger awareness in Malta of forms of free thinking and way of life, and they're more democratic institutions in our Western society mostly. The comparison has been always with the countries in the north, more Western, especially the United Kingdom and Italy, the two traditional societies to which Malta has been always relating itself. Certainly, there are calls, we feel them, at the university, in academia, and in public debates, and in many fields, for a less dominant role of the church in a traditionally Catholic society like Malta. And there were many calls for creation of a more, rather, I would not say it's very difficult at this stage, of a fully secular society, maybe a partially secular state. But there were also calls for legislative reforms. And I'm happy to notice, for example, that there were changes in Malta, for example, in the public attitude. For example, we are very to mention the example of revisions in law regarding property entitlement, which is called in Maltese uso fruttuario. Uso fruttuario, which is a form of law that regulates property entitlement, has clearly last couple of decades showed to us that there is a shift in the attitude of Maltese away from a sacrosanct and a powerful patronizing church to a more secular, which is based and focused on this physical world.
Thank you, Dr. Ashinawi, for your intervention. Certainly, these were very good points which were raised about secularism, and it is very important that we tackle the concepts from a very holistic approach. The discussion continues now with Hilary Briffa in the studios. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Now let us start the debate. Gorkan, let us start with you. What is your view on secularism?
First of all, I would like to start with the introduction of secularism. The word secular is derived from the Latin word secular, which means the present age or generation. Secularization came into use in Europe to describe the transfer of territories previously under the control of the church to the dominion of secular authority or the state. Moreover, Brian Wilson has a very different point of view about secularism, and he stated that secularism is a process which conceptions of the supernatural laws, their sovereignty over human affairs, a pattern broadly identified as secularism. Conceptions of the supernatural are gradually displaced from all social institutions except those specifically devoted to this. These are increasingly circumscribed religious institutions. In other words, secularism staunchly underlines the strict and exact division of the religion affairs and state affairs in order to treat people individually as members of a group, because secularism supports the individual against the pressure of the group and the individual conscience against the dogma of the group.
Thank you, Gorfim. Now, Darren, what do you have to say to that?
Thank you, Hilary. First of all, I would like to point out that debates about the process of secularization have centered on the work of a group of a number of historians and sociologists, mostly British, who have put forth and debated what is known as the secularization thesis. This thesis, along with the so-called convergence thesis, postulates a worldwide decline of religiosity due to the processes of modernization, such as educational expansion, economic transformation, nation building, and also the concept of mass communication. However, one could argue that this theory finds its roots in the history of the predominantly Protestant Christian societies of Northwest Europe, mostly known as the Reformation. When one compares it to Christian societies in East Europe, Latin America, and Africa, one can point out that the letters are arguably less secular than the Northwest Europe.
Well, Darren, do you think it is possible to distinguish between radical and ideological secularism?
It is possible to distinguish between the two because when one argues for absolute separation between state and religion and the moderate forms that exist where secularism has become the order of the day, particularly Western Europe, with partial exception of France, it is possible to distinguish between radical and ideological secularism because when one argues for an absolute separation between state and religion and the moderate forms that exist where secularism has become the order of the day, particularly Western Europe, with partial exception of France, one can find out that secularism has increasingly grown in power and scope, but has historically evolved, and it is continuously evolving to involve compromise with religion and the defining features of Western Europe secularism, rather than absolute separation of religion and politics. Secularism today enjoys hegemony in Western Europe, but it is moderate rather than radical and pragmatic rather than an ideological secularism. Faced with an emergent multi-faith situation, or where there is a political will to incorporate previously marginalized faiths and sects, challenge the privileged status of some religions, the context-intensive and conservationist response may be to pluralize the state-religion link rather than to severe it. This indeed is what is happening across many countries in Western Europe today.
Thank you, Darren. Those are some extremely interesting points you've raised. We'll have to stop here for a short break.
Every day I write the list of reasons why I still believe they do exist. Those beautiful days. Even though it's hard to see, the glass is full and not half empty.
Welcome back to the second episode of It's Debatable, a platform of discussion for the students at the University of Malta. Today we're discussing secularism. Gorkum is arguing in favor of secularized states, whilst Darren has a more moderate opinion of the separation of church and state. Both are students from the Department of International Relations here at the University of Malta. Also present as a phone-in guest is Dr. Angelo Ketcuti, the Press and Political Officer at the European Commission Representation in Malta.
The EU itself is a gathering of member states that in itself is an ad hoc model that primarily represents compromise. So when we speak of secularism in Europe, there is definitely not one way or homogenic view, but a gathering, a collection of various views of the member states themselves, but even within those member states of the different groupings and different interests being represented. You have an institution such as the European Parliament, where you have, yes, people pushing for more secularism in Europe. We have seen the process leading to the convention on the draft European Constitution. We all know what the results were, but there as well there were pushes and people lobbying for a more secularist view of how we want Europe to move ahead. But you have other defenders, so to say, of different interests, of a defense, so to speak, a defense of traditional values that are more, that look more to the Christian values, if you want, but not only. So the EU in itself has rested on this very fundamental value of respecting diversity and actually building on it. In fact, the European Commission itself has been very proactive and positive on promoting dialogue. 2008, if I'm not mistaken, was dedicated to intercultural dialogue, sir. So there you go. It is this mission to promote this culture of dialogue rather than imposing one or the other view forward. So it is the EU in itself represents a forum within its various institutions at various levels, whether it's civil society level, at political level, or at even representative level, like the European Parliament, as the European Parliament is. These are all fora where the different interests are defended and further developed.
Let us now return to our rousing debate. Gorkum, can secularism be established in every society, for example, in Muslim or Christian societies?
Before delving into details, I would like to point out the exact difference between secularism and atheism. There are some people who conflate secularism with atheism. However, atheism is lack of belief in God, where secularism is a belief in equality in politics, education and law, regardless of religious belief. In this regard, the cause of secularism can be classified into three main points: social differentiation, socialization, and rationalization. But the question is, the question that you ask me, I would like to say, of course, yes, because I would like to raise as a case study France and Turkey. As we all know, France is a Christian secular state, and Turkey represents Muslim, Islamic secular state. As it has been discussed already, the forces that set themselves in opposition to the church and its powers came to be known as secular, while the struggle against the church and the process which eventually led to the decline of religious authoritarianism replaced it with a rational and scientific outlook. This has been termed secularization. At this point, it would be beneficial to look at French and Turkish examples in order to comprehend why secularism is very essential and efficient in state affairs. For instance, the French Republic has always recognized individuals rather than groups. A French citizen owes allegiance to the nation and has no official sanctioned ethnic or religious identity. This way of citizenship is fundamentally non-discriminatory and inclusive. On the contrary, we have also an example of Algeria as the former colony of France, that when National Salvation Front won parliamentary elections, only to be frustrated from assuming power by a military intervention. As a result, the Islamists in Algeria have turned to terrorism. We have also the example of Turkey as a successful transition from the abolition of the Ottoman Caliphate to the establishment of the Turkish Republic in 1923. This established popular sovereignty in a secular republican framework in opposition to a system whose authority is based on religion. As of many examples of state modernization, this shows secularization and democratization as mutually reinforcing processes relying on a separation of religion and state.
Thank you, Gorkem. And Darren, what do you have to say to that?
Hilary, I can quote an example from the British case, where we see that pluralizing and multiculturalizing in a number of incremental, ad hoc and experimental steps can ultimately yield to positive results. For example, some years ago, Prince Charles let it be known that as a monarch, he would prefer the title of Defender of Faith rather than the historic title Defender of the Faith. And this is an example that ultimately a reformed establishment can be one way of institutionalizing religious pluralism.
Thank you, Darren. Gorkem, do you have a closing remark that you would like to make?
Yes, just a couple of words, please. Finally, I would like to point out that religion, being above all a matter of personal faith, cannot be used as the basis of settling questions of the real world or of men in society. While individuals in society may base their values on particular religious tenets, where such questions impinge on society as a whole, the basis of discussion and social consensus cannot be religion. We see how the French, the Turks, and other nations, for example, India, use the local form of laicism to avoid the cumbersome phrase separation of religious organizations from the state in order to prevent religious conflicts and keep in view multi-religiosity of the society.
Thank you, Gorkem. Darren, may you please leave us with your closing comment?
Yes, I was here arguing for moderate secularism, which does not tread on the toes of freedom of religion, a right that has been asserted in the United Nations Charter, the European Union Charter, as well as our own Maltese Constitution, and lobby for governments to make the most of religious pluralism in their respective countries without letting religious ideologies unnecessarily cloud their political decisions.
Thank you. That was Darren Ketkuti. I would also like to thank today's other participants, Gorkem Dirik, and our academic advisor, Dr. Arsalan Alshinawi, as well as Dr. Kalleya, our head of department, Kenneth Mitzi for his technical assistance, and Joyce Gregg for her coordination. To our dear listeners, I do hope you enjoyed today's program. You too can have your say on the discussion online. Go to www.mirsa.org.mt. That's www.mirsa.org.mt. And click on It's Debatable. On behalf of the Department of International Relations and the Malta International Relations Student Association, I, Hilary Briffa, thank you for tuning in and hope you will join us next week. Until then, keep updated. It's Debatable.